Okay. So, what is your name?
Brendan John McKeel. Brendan is my religious name. By baptism, I'm John, but my religious name is Brendan. So everybody here calls me Brendan. All my family call me Jack.
What year were you born?
1922.
What did your parents do?
My dad worked in a bank, and my mother was a grade school teacher. She taught in a one-room schoolhouse here west, east of Green Bay. She taught all 8 grades. One-room schoolhouse. And she went, but she got there, she had to make the fire first to keep the room warm.
Wow. So where were you born?
Fond du Lac.
Okay. Can you tell me about your early life?
Well, I grew up in Fond du Lac. Graduated from high school in 1940. I was a rabid Packer fan from early on because one of my uncles, my mother's youngest brother, Arnie, played high school football at West Green Bay High School with Arnie Herber, who became one of the Packer all-time greats. And by the time I was a youngster, Herber was already a Packer hero and a great NFL quarterback. So I heard about the Packers from my uncle and from my grandfather from right away. So I've been a Packer fan for forever. Then I graduated and went to a Catholic grade school and through ninth grade and public high school for 3 years, sophomores, junior and senior. Graduated in 1940. Then I came up here to St. Norbert College. Thanks to my grandmother, my mother's mother, who I, little nice Belgian lady. I don't know if she even finished eighth grade, but I was her oldest grandchild, first grandchild. And when I graduated, we had no money. The Depression was on. And she came to my graduation from Green Bay to Fond du Lac, high school graduation, and said that if I wanted to go to St. Norbert College, I could stay with them, with my grandparents and several aunts and uncles in West Green Bay for $2.50 a week. So that's how I got to St. Norbert. If it hadn't been for my grandmother, I don't know what I would have done.
So you came to St. Norbert in 1940?
1940, yeah, when tuition was $250 a year.
Wow, times have changed. What did you study while you were here?
Well, I majored in accounting, because I always liked mathematics and figures and arithmetic, and my dad was, I guess I inherited that from my dad, who was worked in the bank in Fond du Lac, so I always... I liked bookkeeping in high school, and so I majored in accounting at St. Norbert. But it was interrupted in our junior year. Of course, the war was, World War II had begun in 1939. The United States entered in 1941, late after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. So we all got called in our junior year. We were called into the service. So middle of my junior year, I went into the Army for 3 years. Then I came back in 46 and finished 46, 47, finished my up at St. Norbert, where I graduated in 1947.
What were you doing when you heard about Pearl Harbor?
I was in a little room where my grandfather was sitting with his spittoon right next to him. We were listening to a Packer game. I was sitting on the floor with him. December 7th, 1941.
Mm-hmm.
So.
When you came back to St. Norbert, did you feel like you were changed after being in the Army when you came back?
Did I think I was changed?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know I was changed, oh yeah, because I had never been anywhere, you know, the biggest trip of my life. Oh, my dad took us once to Chicago, my brother and me, when we were kids, but I'd never been anywhere. So I saw a lot of things for the first time. We went, basic training was in Georgia, and there I saw blacks and segregation for the first time in my life. I'd hardly ever even seen a black. We went to a Catholic church in Macon, Georgia, up near our camp, and the blacks were all in their own little section, blacks only, up way in the right-hand back corner. They couldn't even sit with the whites. And they went to communion after all of us whites went to communion. This is 1943. But then I began thinking, something's not right here. Something's not right. And then experience, I was a year overseas in the Philippines, and island of Luzon, a little while in New Guinea for 6 weeks, but a year in the Philippines, and I got to know, we were right close, so close to the Filipino people, so I got to know and love them very much. And it was all of 1945 I was in the Philippines. So I met and mingled with, for the first time, a lot of non-Catholics. My whole life before that were pretty much the church and my friends and our team. Everything was in pretty much Catholic circle. Now it's people of all sorts, Protestants, Jews, people who didn't believe anything. And so it was, and while I was stationed out east for a while on the outskirts of Philadelphia, so I got to see Philadelphia very well, and got to New York. My gosh, New York. Oh, wow. Washington, D.C. Wow. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. So that was quite an eye-opener for me to be, when I was in the Army. I saw a lot of things I probably would never have seen.
Did you bring those experiences, excuse me, back to St. Norbert and feel like the world was a little small here after seeing all those things?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, because after being all over the United States, I was up north in northern New York, I was on the west coast, Seattle, well, near Seattle, and then down to California and everything before I went overseas. So, yeah, I knew there was a big world out there besides Fond du Lac and Green Bay.
What were your professors like while you were on campus?
What were they like?
Yes.
Well, first of all, they're almost all priests. At that time, the faculty, I think, was 90% priests. Now, I don't know if there's hardly one, but they were all Norbertine priests, and they're all very good, and that's what got me into the order then, a year after I came back from the Army, I guess. I taught 1 year in high school, just one class. While I was a senior at the college, I also taught a class at the high school. And I liked teaching. I guess I inherited that from my mother. And I liked the Norbertines were teaching, so I said, well, maybe that's for me. But they were good because St. Norbert was so small. We were only about 300. When I came, we were only 357 was the whole student body, all boys at that time. But you knew everybody, you knew all the priests, and it's just like a big family, so and it just very comfortable. It was going to school, it was fun. It was just like mingling with the whole gang of friends, not just the students, but also the faculty. We knew them. We knew everybody knew everybody.
Do you have a favorite memory of a faculty member?
Favorite? Oh, no favorites. There were so a whole bunch of, I didn't have any. One favorite, I don't think.
Do you remember what buildings were on campus?
There are three buildings. Boyle Hall, which was built in 1916. By the way, they'll have its 100th anniversary in 2 years. That was built by a man from my hometown, Van Fond du Lac. Boyle. I mean, his money in yeast, I guess. But anyway, he gave us Boyle Hall. It cost $50,000, and it's still one of the soundest buildings on campus. Boyle Hall was here. The upper two floors were actually St. Norbert High School. The college is only the first two floors, and the high school was the top two floors. Main Hall was here, and the gym, which is now the Vandenhoevel Center. It's expanded now, but the gym. There were only those three buildings. Well, the church was here, but the church is actually, well, the church was three things. It was the parish church, St. Joseph's Parish. It was used by the Norbertines, because this priory was then our abbey. So that was used as our abbey church, and it was also the college chapel, so it served three purposes. But there were only, if you count the church, there were four, but that didn't really belong to the college. So there were only three buildings, Main Hall, Boyle Hall, and the gym, little gym.
What was life like after being at St. Norbert? How did it change you?
After being at St. Norbert?
Mm-hmm. After being a student here.
Well, of course, then after I graduated in 47, I taught a year at the college as a layman. I taught accounting for a year. And then, over the objection of several lovely young ladies, I decided to join the order in 1948. So life after that was life as a Norbertine, as a frater, and then as a priest. In 1953, I was ordained.
What did you teach at St. Norbert?
Well, first I was back teaching with the same book in the same room. I was teaching accounting that I had taught before I joined the order. So I taught accounting for, 53. I taught accounting for four more years, and then I went to Marquette to get a master's degree in economics. And I came back then in 58, I think, and began teaching economics exclusively. I think maybe I taught a little accounting one or two years, but then I began teaching economics, which I did for the next about 20 years.
What did you do after you finished teaching?
Well, I in 1978, I finished, that was my last year teaching here. Then I went over to Abbott Pennings High School. St. Norbert High School, which had been on the top floors of Boyle, moved over to a building that was West Depeer High School. And now they left and we bought it from them, and we moved our high school over there, and then we called it Abbott Pennings High School. And now it's Abbott Pennings Center, that they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a college building because we closed 1991. We closed Abbott Pennings High School. Well, anyway, I went over there with my accounting. I went over there as business manager for 10 years, beginning in 1979. And I stayed there for 10 years until my mother was up here, and I was taking care of her. I wasn't living with her, but I was practically living with her. Took care, and she died in 1988, and that was my last year at Abbott Pennings as the business manager. Oh, I also taught. I taught on the side once. I taught a class in Latin. Principally I was business manager.
Let's see. What has been your proudest moment as a faculty or staff member here?
My proudest moment?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think starting in the 60s, early 60s, on campus we began something called Young Christian Students, YCS. Now, this was a movement that had come from, actually it came from the Belgian mines. A priest there, Father Cardine, CARDIGN. He started study groups of Belgian workers using the method called See, Judge, and Act. They met every week for about an hour, and they, with a little scripture, they looked at some issues, some problem, and they judged it, tried to judge it in the light of Christian teaching, and then finally, what can we do about it? Well, that moved to France, where it was Young Christian Workers, JOC in French, and was also students, again, college students, some high school, but Princeton college students. And from there, it jumped over to the United States to Duquesne University in Pennsylvania and Notre Dame. And one of our priests, classmate of mine, Father Robert Brooks, went to Notre Dame, and he saw it in action there, and he brought it to St. Norbert. So beginning, as a matter of fact, it began in 1961. We got organized a group of 8 to 12 students. Could be all co-eds or all guys or mixed. We had about 10 groups like that. And I was, each one had a chaplain, you could call on, or a moderator or something. And I had two co-ed groups. One year I think I had three. And we met every week. And the same thing, see, judge, and act, something on campus that we saw. And we met every week, and that established some real lasting friendships. And some of those girls who were in my group back in the 60s were here for my 60th anniversary last year. And I've been in contact with them ever since. I had some of their weddings, baptized a couple of their babies. But that led me up to the most satisfying moment, I think. It was 1964. Shortly, I don't know the exact date, shortly before June 6th, because in those days, graduation was for the college was always June 6th, because the Feast of St. Norbert. It was always June 6th. Of course, it's not anymore. They graduate in May now. But it was just before, must have been June 4th, 5th, 3rd, 4th, or 5th, anyway. This girl, Ginny was her name, Ginny Zonke, a nice-looking blonde, had been in one of my groups for 2 or 3 years. So she said she wanted, could I talk to you? So she came up to my office and she just said, and we had all, this wasn't just a meeting with the students there, we had parties with them, occasionally we'd have a mass with them, and I mean, we're really, it was more than just that weekly meeting, we were just good friends. And but she said, before I graduate, she said, I just want to thank you for being here for us, being here. Oh, no. That's the nicest thing anybody had ever said to me. You're there. If we need somebody to talk to, we know you're always here. That was, it made it all worthwhile.
So were you here in 1952 when the college went co-ed? Time?
Yeah, that was a year before I was ordained, yeah.
Okay. What was that like, having the first full-time female students here?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It was like, first of all, at first we didn't have many girls because we didn't have any dorms. We couldn't. First year, I don't know if we had any girls living on campus because there's no place for them to stay. So they came from Green Bay, mostly from St. Joe's Academy. But I remember the first class in accounting, I had two girls. One was the daughter of a guy I had known in Fond du Lac and had caddied for, Patty McGoldrick. I had two girls, and they were so scared because they knew they were going in a room with us, which was all boys. Neither one would go until the other one arrived. They could walk in the door together. They didn't want to even come in. And I remember that the room smelled much better after the girls came. That was noticeable. So, but then the numbers increased. Right away, there were a couple houses. One back over here is gone now. The other one was on the corner That's gone too. Oh, there's one right across from Boyle Street, right, from Boyle Hall. There were three houses, so. And then, but then they started building the dorms and got, but it was nice. And the girls, of course, were favorites, not just because they were girls. The boys complained, oh, sure, all you gotta do around here is wear a skirt and shave your legs and you get an A. And the boys didn't want. But the girls were different. They almost always did what you told them to do, class. And they studied harder, they were better students. That was noticeable. But they added the feminine touch. And was, so we began to have a lot of girls' activities and more, a few more dances and stuff. And of course I got the YCS groups with meeting every week with these co-eds, where that was, I got really involved with them. They really made a difference in the college. A good positive difference. And boys are all right. Huh? We agree on that, huh? We're not against boys.
No.
But God created Adam and Eve, male and female, he created them. First chapter of Genesis. So he knew what he was doing.
We would hope. Let's see. What else were you here for? We were here in the 60s.
All of the 60s.
And was there a lot of discussion about the war in Vietnam?
Yeah. We began, every campus had it. The students are kind of you might call it a sort of rebellion against authority. And so it was... There was a lot of questioning. Of course, that was the time of Vatican II in the church. The church was now questioning itself and came up, thank you God, with Vatican II. That began in 62 and lasted until 65. But everywhere there were movements Vietnam, but black rights, women's rights, all those things were bubbling up. So it was a busy time. A lot of movements, a lot of questions, which is good.
What was the attitude on campus toward a lot of those things?
Well, it was like everywhere else, it was divided. Some students were protesting. I remember they had a sit-in. Is that cannon still out in front of...
No, that's been gone a while.
That's gone. That was, well, they had a sit-in. Of course, there was a war. Protesters had a sort of peaceful sit-in by the cannon. I think they put flowers in the nozzle of the cannon. But then there were others that said, oh, no, you're radical, you guys, and it's the same splits we have today. You know, not as sharp as they are today, but we have, and faculty too were divided, and so. Interesting time.
What side of it were you on?
Well, I was on the correct side, Margaret.
What side was that?
Well, I was lucky that I came in when I was older. I was 26 years old when I joined the order, and I had come experience. I had gone out with a lot of girls. I was virtually engaged once. And I, of course, had war experience. Well, most of the guys who came into the seminary didn't have that. They came in as kids out of high school. And seminary education at that time, and continued for a long time, and it's in some places it's still that way. It wasn't very broad. It was philosophy, theology, scripture, all good things. But there was no real experience of the world. They hadn't been anywhere. I don't think some of them ever had their arm around a girl at all, even on a dance floor. And in the seminary, we didn't study what I think are the essential areas of the social sciences, economics, sociology, political science. Good course in American history. There was no teaching like you get from Howard Zinn. And most priests didn't have that. I don't think my personally most of them have it yet. But so they were theologizing, but they didn't really know the world. Let me put it that way. Still, popes beginning in 1891 with Leo XIII had said that you got to be acquainted with the world. You got to know these things. But of course, you can say it in Rome, and then it depends what the bishops do. And the bishops, of course, are dependent on what the priests do in their diocese and rectors of universities, presidents and faculties of universities. They have to do it too. And so, I think I was on the side of those. We have to know the world. We have to question things and get down to the basics, which are social justice. I hope they put that on my tombstone. I don't think we do. We don't write anything on our tombstones, though. But that wasn't big. You could find it in the encyclicals, but you couldn't find it as much in the seminaries. And of course, John the 23rd changed that considerably, and now, thanks be to God, our present Pope is very much doing that. But getting outside, getting away from, whether you're layman or religious, getting outside, getting into other countries, being with poor people, that changes everything. St. Paul has that one line, I might have quoted it to you before because it's one of my favorite lines, where he says, associate with the lowly. Missionaries do that. Missionaries do that. And that's why the greatest years of my life, were the years I spent in Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras. Every day, Margaret, for 13 years, except when I came here on vacation, I was with poor people. You look at the world differently. You look at everything differently. So, I had a lot of that. When I was a student here, and I don't know how long it lasted, but when I was a student here, a requirement, every semester each student took 2 credits, 2 hours. We were on the credit system, which is better than the system you're on now. Every semester you took 2 credits of what they called religion. Now they call it theology. In the first semester of your junior year, you took the social encyclicals. And I had that just before I went into the Army. It was the first semester of junior year. So we bumped into it there. They don't do that now. Although I've tried to. Nobody should graduate from here, from this or any Christian college without being confronted by social teachings of Christianity. It's not just Catholicism, it's Christianity, which I say includes Judaism, because Jesus was the Christ, but Jesus was also a Jew, and he never stopped being a Jew. So the long answer to your question, which side was I on? Well, I was on the side of I guess you could say the side of social justice, which I thought was very much in play then. Questions about, you know, treatment of women and blacks and minorities and other people, wars. Those are all social justice questions. So. So that's the long answer to your very simple question.
Do you feel that you brought your experiences in Mexico back to St. Norbert?
Yes. Well, you mean St. Norbert? Well, since I didn't go back to the college, I gave it, a few times I've given talks and classes, and I gave a couple of talks to groups. That's what I always talked about. Yeah. But I bring it last Sunday, it was a week before, Sunday before this, I had a Sunday afternoon of reflection with the local Spanish-speaking people, and that was, well, I had two talks to give, yeah, and that was my theme was, title was How to Think Like a Christian. And you think social justice. That's how Christians think. Not me, but we. All of us. So I would have invited you, but I don't think you speak Spanish.
I do not, unfortunately. when you were a student here, did you feel like social justice was taught a lot more? You said you took it as a junior.
No, I didn't.
No?
I didn't think about it at all. I had no experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no experience of it. It was going into the service and young Christian students, those meetings, we began to talk with students and listen to students that did it, and then Vatican II came along, and two, three, four of us priests are very involved. We talked to one another, and we're engaged as much as we could be here, so that opened it up. But while I was here as a student before, no, my chief interest was the Packers, I think, and girls to a certain extent, but the Packers were first.
Did you go to any games?
Oh, I never missed a game. For 35 straight years, I never missed a home game. First game I saw was September 20th, 1936. The Bears, my uncle took me in. I was just a little awesome, only 11, 12 years old then, I guess. My Uncle Joe squeezed me in. At that time, you could do it. If you could squeeze a little guy, a little girl, into the turnstile with your dad or your uncle or your big brother, they let you go in. They don't do that anymore.
But no.
My Uncle Joe. So the Bears beat the Packers 30-3. But we came back and beat them in Chicago, the return game, and went on to win the title that year. But of course, you know that. Yeah.
Well, very good.
I was a kid when I had my celebration here. My first girlfriend, Marion, second grade, came all the way, and she's 4 months older than I am. She's a widow for 5-6 years or so. But she came from San Diego for my celebration. So I had the head table, I had all my classmates from grade school, there were 6-7 of them still living, they were there. Marion was seated right to my left, so I had to confess to her that in the 1930s, when we were together in grade school, I said, Marion, I never told you this before, but the Packers were more important than you were.
What was her reply?
She was second. She was a good second.
What did she say to that?
She just laughed. That was really something, though, that she came. And all by herself, she's 90. Well, now she's 90. She'll be 92 on July 13th. I'll be 92 in November. And we still correspond. She's an assisted living, they call it. She's in assisted living now. She had 9 children. And one of them, whose wedding I had in this church, lives up in Eagle River. He and his wife, and they were there too for the celebration. So this must be three or four years ago. They had a family get together, and they planned it for 2 years because she had 9 children. Of course, she had a whole raft of grandchildren. So they planned a family reunion. It was Pentecost Sunday that weekend up in Eagle River, where her son and her daughter, where they have their houses, and they had me up there as a guest. And Sunday morning, we rented a room down, a big room in the motel. We had mass with just the family. There were about 63 people there. It was a nice. And she was still playing, until a year or two ago, she was still playing golf. I gave that up, I think almost 20. Well, I had to give it up when I went to Mexico. But she was still playing golf. my second grade girlfriend, yeah.
Are you still in contact with people you went to school with here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've always, I don't know where I got the app, but I've always kept in contact with people I had. For a long time, I had the address, the date of all the couples that I married, and I had a lot of students, of course. We all did, we all students. And, of course, my own family, my two nieces and my nephew, and friends. But I kept there, and I used to write to them every year on their anniversary. Well, I got out of that habit. I couldn't do it very well when I went in Mexico, but I still do some of them. Matter of fact, I have to call one today from one of the girls in my very first co-ed discussion group, the YCS. Her husband, today is their 42nd anniversary. They live in Minneapolis. So I got to email them. So yeah, I keep in touch. To writing letters. When I was in the Army, I wrote an average of 3 letters a day. 3 every day for 3 years. All my relatives, all the families and friends. And so, yeah, I'm in touch. We're good old email. I'm still in touch with a lot of the people in Mexico, in Guatemala, one in Nicaragua.
Very good. Is there anything else you wanted to add about your life?
Can't think of anything. I've talked so much.